All right, welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, Podbean, anywhere you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. If you want to email us with any advertising inquiries, you can find us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at @LockedOnBulls, like us on Facebook at @LockedOnBulls. I'm Sean Hyken. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. And Cody, we have this year's coach as harder. Nick did not come from Jimmy Butler.
It came in a much, much more diplomatic manner after the Bulls lost 107-97 to the Washington Wizards in a game they were tied entering the fourth quarter. And the Bulls were thoroughly outplayed, outscored 30-20 by the Wizards in the fourth quarter, continuing the trend of the Bulls being awful in the final 12 minutes of games. And the Bulls' offense largely stagnated again, and they didn't get back on defense very well. It was a snowball effect in pretty much every regard and capacity there for the Bulls. But after the game, Dwayne Wade was asked whether the Bulls were too predictable on offense. Specifically, I think the gist of the question and the tone of the conversation was pertaining mainly to the fourth quarter as context, but he agreed that they were predictable. He said it's okay to be predictable because, like, everyone knows the ball's going to star players late. But then Dwayne Wade kind of took issue with some of the approach to the Bulls or the play calling in a way, and he said, let's call it what it is, we're putting a lot of pressure on Jimmy in the fourth quarter to make a lot of plays because we're just running one action, so we got to get more action, more body movement. It's got to come from us players too. Obviously, some of it is play calling as well. Some of it is we got to get out of the way, we got to move, we got to keep them honest. But that kind of sounds like, hey, coaching staff, hey, Fred Hoiberg, put us in a better position to win basketball games late, because again, the Bulls did fall into some isolation tendency here, but what do you read into those comments from Dwayne Wade, Sean?
I think he's frustrated. I mean, this morning at shoot-around, he kind of said he's frustrated that fans are booing them, even though, like, the team isn't very good. I think it's just kind of a continuation of that frustration, but what I thought was interesting, even more so maybe than Dwayne saying what he said, because he's always been pretty outspoken about stuff. Obviously, he was very diplomatic about it in this case, but Jimmy Butler afterwards, he's a guy, you know, we've tried to ask him before if he thinks that maybe there's too much pressure on him to do too much for this team offensively, and he's always said, no, I don't think so, like that, you know, he always just kind of dismissed the notion. Brought it up tonight, we told him kind of what Dwayne said, and he's like, well, maybe so, I'll have to watch the film. I think it seemed like he was at least sort of open to the idea that maybe that's the case this time.
Yeah, and the thing I thought about the Dwayne Wade comments, I'm glad you brought up the comments about Dwayne taking issue with the Bulls fans. He was unprompted, basically, at shoot-around, question that was only vaguely in the ballpark, more about struggles than anything else. And he said he thought the fans should have shown more patience and not booed last Friday in what was just a humiliating loss to the Bucks, in which they scored 69 points and played terrible basketball. Fans were on the Bulls, booed them off the court at the end of the game. The ones that were left, a large other portion, left the game early after probably booing at various points before that. But so Dwayne Wade just, I mean, this is him kind of going out of his way here, because he could have kept this post-game comment in generalities and just been like, you know, as a team, we got to do better, and there's just not enough spacing, so we got to work harder at that. But when he said, let's call it what it is, that's Dwayne Wade almost taking a highlighter, being like, hey, everyone, here, I'm going to say something to you. Let's call it what it is. And your ears kind of perk up, and you're like, oh, okay, what is this? What's he pointing out and making sure we're aware of and notice here? So Dwayne Wade is getting some points across. And, I mean, it's twofold. He didn't just call out the coaching staff, throw him under the bus. And again, he did this in the most diplomatic way possible. But he said, like, the players, like himself, Rajon Rondo, Doug McDermott, Lopez, Gibson, whoever's out there, they have to move more on the floor, whether it's setting screens for others, whether it's cutting, whatever it is, getting Jimmy Butler more room to operate in space, because there's not enough space there. And so he did put that on players. But here's what I find interesting too about this, is we've gone all through training camp when they signed Rajon Rondo all the way back to July, early in the season, like, how's Rondo get along with coaches? Oh, you give him the freedom to call any play he wants, and you take a back seat as a coach, right? He clashed with Rick Carlisle in Dallas because Rick Carlisle was a micromanager in the sense of calling plays. When Rondo has thrived, it's largely been because coaches gave him freedom. And, of course, he probably had more freedom when he was younger and playing better basketball. But that was the idea in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
You know, he could have freedom out there on the court to be a lead decision maker. But if Fred's not calling plays from the sideline and isolation plays are just getting run, then it's kind of the players who are the problem here, and then a problem because your coach isn't standing up and saying what you should be running. If Fred is micromanaging more in the fourth quarter and calling a lot of plays, then you're taking issue with Rondo and not giving him that creative freedom and ability. And look, he was bad in this game.
Rondo was
1 for 10
tonight.
Jimmy was 6 of 20. The big three shot 14 of 50, I believe, on field goals. So they were all bad offensively. But, like, that's a catch-22, is it not? Like, what's Fred do in that case?
Yeah, I don't know. And this is why I've always kind of thought the Rondo fit was weird. Because, I mean, even though he's had very good games, it's like, if you're not getting good Rondo, then he's going to just completely sink you. And you saw that tonight kind of in the fourth quarter, you know, down the stretch when, you know, the Bulls got it back within four and it seemed like maybe they could have had a chance to come and pull it out. You know, a couple of really careless turnovers and Rondo just kind of holding the ball. He took some really ill-advised shots early in the shot clock tonight. That's why this fit has always been a little bit awkward to me.
Now, Wade played under Eric Spoelstra. He played under Pat Riley. He played under Stan Van Gundy.
Uh-huh.
Was Stan the coach when he was a rookie?
Stan was the coach when he was a rookie, yeah.
I mean, he's played under... Okay, let's be real here. Let's put it how it is.
Let's...
Like, what are you saying? Let's say it like it is. He's played under three brilliant coaches.
Yes.
Okay. Stan Van Gundy's a really good coach. And I know Pat Riley replaced him midseason in the name of winning a championship or whatnot, but he's highly respected across the league. And Eric Spoelstra is one of the best coaches in the NBA.
Uh-huh.
So Dwayne Wade here is dealing with a second-year NBA coach who hasn't proved nearly as much. And let's cut to the chase. He's just not as good as a coach as those other three. Fred Hoiberg isn't, at least not even close with this roster, what he's been given. So Wade expressing these things, I mean, that could be saying something here on his end, but it also could be stemming from frustration because he's never been in this position necessarily with a coach that maybe internally he thinks he knows more than and has been through the rigors more. You know what I mean?
Right, and I mean, I think there's something to that, but on the other hand, though, you know, he knew what he was signing up for when he came to the Bulls. He knew that the front office was totally behind Fred Hoiberg and he was their guy, and you know, he's so far this season, up until, you know, recently, has kind of bought into everything he's been doing and saying, you know, working with him on the shot, just kind of showing the young guys that he's, you know, buying what Fred's selling. And it seems like it's turned a little bit. And I don't know where that's going to end up, but, you know, it seems like maybe Dwayne is, in his own way, he's not going to come out. He's far too much of a professional to come out and just say, oh, yeah, the coach needs to do this differently. He needs to coach us harder. But, you know,
that's why we have to read between the lines, though, to see what he means, you know. And we followed up with, have you been in communication with Fred about your beliefs here on the
offense? And he just
said,
offense? We talk about everything.
And yeah, he said, so, like, and I think they probably have. And I also think that Dwayne Wade probably, for the most part, was on board with the go through Jimmy, play isolation basketball. Jimmy's been brilliant. Let him play that leading role, even if it is a little stagnated as an offense previously. But now maybe just the visceral way in which they got their butt kicked again, you know, like maybe it's opening his eyes up a little more. And he said that. And look, he doesn't need permission from his teacher or principal like he's in elementary school to say what he thinks, you know. Like,
right.
He's the adult. He's the big boy in the room. He can say whatever he wants. And I don't have a problem with sending messages through the media either. To kind of semi-related topic there, but when Jimmy Butler called out Fred Hoiberg last year to coach harder, I thought the Bulls should have sent a big message to the media, and they passed on that opportunity. No one admonished him publicly through comments to reporters in any way whatsoever. So, like, I think this is one way, one mechanism to get your feelings out there, have conversations about it too. Like, you're already talking to Fred about it. Like, fans aren't dumb. We're all smart enough to see it's not working in the fourth quarter. There's nothing wrong with being open, honest, upfront, and explaining how, in some ways, that's wrong. And it's been really wrong in the fourth quarter. The Bulls have the second worst scoring margin in the NBA in the fourth quarter, 29 out of 30, and they have the worst field goal percentage in the entire NBA in the fourth quarter. It was 37% entering this Wednesday night that they lost to the Wizards on, and 7 of 24, it's probably only getting a lot worse from there. So the Bulls have to figure it out late somehow, and I have a suggestion. Play Doug McDermott over Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, so you can and run Wade to the point. So Wade, Jimmy, yes. Doug, and then Robin and Taj, or Nico
yes.
and Taj.
Correct.
By the way, we want to point out a couple of positives from this game. There weren't very many, but hey, second consecutive game, Doug McDermott and Nico Mirotic both in double figures. I thought they both looked pretty good when they had the ball in their hands, when they had plays called for them.
Doug shot 4 of 11. I know he had one shot go in and out from the perimeter. Not as good of a shooting performance as you'd want, but yes, like he looked good.
He looked confident.
Normal.
He looked confident. Nico particularly, 3 for 6 from 3, only 4 for 10 overall, but 3 for 6 from 3-point range, and then he had another couple go in and out. I just like the looks that he's getting. I like how confidently he's shooting them. He doesn't seem like he's hesitating on anything. I mean, it's what you want to see from him, and I think it's encouraging that both of them have strung together 2 solid games in a row, and you know the hope is that this is something that they can build on. And then if you can get 2 consistent scoring threats off the bench, that's just going to make, you know, what Dwayne is talking about, having different actions to be able to run, that's going to make it so much easier if you can count on Doug and Nico every night. I mean, it's only been 2 games, so it's too early to really say that that's going to be the case, but I have to say I was encouraged by what I saw from them tonight.
Yeah, and you said more actions to run, and here's a point I would make about the Bulls' offense. I don't like the isolation basketball when it's your traditional isolation basketball and they clear out 4 guys on one side of the court. Basically what happens is Jimmy catches the ball on the other side and
right.
thinks too much.
Uh-huh.
They do that with Dwayne a little bit. And even other times it's not quite that blatant, but maybe Jimmy gets the ball in the right wing and he catches it and there's no one around him cutting or setting a screen and he holds the ball for 2 or 3 seconds. Like, right there, and then he starts pounding it. Like, to me, that's already isolation basketball. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What I like and that they need to do more of is having Jimmy and D-Wade catch that ball in a rhythm from a teammate early in the offense, whatever. And I like when there's, like, a screener right there already in the flow in the next direction. So you catch it at the top of the key from the left and you kind of go right and that screen's already there and you flow into that. And then if that action turns into an isolation, okay. If that turns into one-on-one, okay. But you have, like, momentum going toward the hoop. You have a screen from a teammate. Maybe you have someone coming off a curl elsewhere. Maybe that guy's rolling. Like, that's what the Bulls need to do. But too often, it's like the ball's just getting swung. Like it's the Wisconsin swing offense or something, and you just hold it for 4 seconds on the right wing. You know what I mean? That's not working. So I don't feel like they have that movement and that next guy there, that screener. They're not doing that enough. And it's as simple as that. Like, it's fine for Jimmy Butler to have the ball in his hands all the time in the fourth quarter. It's fine for him to end up one-on-one situations all the time in the fourth quarter. He's a top 10 scorer in the NBA.
You just have to get him better looks.
But yeah, get better looks. And that's what Dwayne Wade's trying to say. So there's better ways to go about doing that. And I mentioned the Doug McDermott over Rondo part, and we asked Fred, did you consider that in the fourth quarter? And it's worth pointing out, he hasn't done this in full yet, but he's done it offense, defense for a couple minutes at a time. In that win over the Spurs, he played McDermott all the way to the 2-minute mark of the fourth quarter before putting Rondo back in. And that's their best win of the year, probably.
Yeah.
Asked Fred if he thought about it, and he goes, well, I thought about it, but Rondo has been one of our best players lately. Then he caught himself and said he was great Monday. So, like, he's been one of our best players in the last 48 hours.
He almost was honest. He was almost honest.
And then he said he wanted Rondo out there for the pacing.
Because he's their fastest player, which, you know, when you have a 31-year-old point guard who's had a torn ACL and he's your fastest player, that's... But the thing is, he's not wrong. He might be their fastest player. I'm looking at the roster. There's really not a whole lot.
I just think at that point, if Fred's trying to get points to me, it's like, with that response and the lineup he had out there, he was prioritizing getting fast break points over putting them in the best position to win in the half court, in my opinion, having Rondo out there. Because that's what he's talking about, pacing, easy buckets. But if your defense isn't getting the job done, and you're taking the ball out of the hoop, got to take it out of bounds, got to find someone to throw it into and get going, you're not going to get fast breaks. You know what I mean? And plus, The Wizards, I mean, just did a fairly decent job of getting back on defense. It felt like in just normal to me, like, especially in the fourth quarter, like, teams make a point in the fourth quarter to get back on defense a little more. Like, they lock in a little more on those star players, as we see here with the Bulls, and they maybe don't crash the glass quite as much because they know they need to take away those easy buckets. And teams know if they do take away those easy buckets for the Bulls with Rondo on the court, they end up in the half court with Rondo out there, and it's really easy to defend. So, like, Fred right there is prioritizing the first 7 seconds of the shot clock over the last 17 seconds of the shot clock in a situation in which, at best, you're only going to take advantage of those first 7 seconds of the shot clock, what, one out of every four possessions, maybe? Yeah. One out of every five?
It's worth
pointing, a perfect world.
It's worth pointing out, by the way, that the Wizards won the fast break points battle tonight 32-16, doubled them up.
32-16, and the Bulls have been allowing 11.9 per game entering the night, which is spectacular, actually. I said it was solid earlier. It's actually spectacular considering how much they crashed the offensive glass.
Uh-huh.
To be the best offensive rebounding team in the NBA, or second best, whatever they are, and to be top 10, top 11 in transition defense, that's remarkable. And it speaks a little bit probably to their slow pace, because the Bulls are below league average in pace and just pushing the ball there in general, and slower games tend to have fewer fast break points probably jotted down in that box score when those geniuses are making decisions on the sidelines and everything. But still, to be able to do that is great. John Wall tonight was really fast, though.
Yeah.
Dwayne Wade said it was unfair how fast he is. It's either him or Russell Westbrook for the fastest man up the court in the NBA. There's no doubt about that. And, I mean, Wall outplayed Rondo so much. I mean, Rondo had 10 assists. That's the first loss this year for the Bulls when he has 10 assists or more.
Yeah.
But
he also shot one for 10 with four turnovers.
Yeah, and I mean, Rondo made some bad plays in the fourth quarter, too. There was a bad pass that led to a run-out dunk for the Wizards. There was nearly an exact same replica of that play, but it kind of took a funny bounce and went off the Wizards, or it would have been a run-out dunk, too, and he would have had five turnovers and two really ugly ones and freebies for the Wizards. So, like, I'm just going to say, like, next time Rondo, like, stubs his toe, next time he tweaks his ankle, Bulls need to get that injury update press release fired up. Make up an injury for Rajon Rondo. Sit him out 4 or 5 games and see what happens if you rely on Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade more at point guard. And this needs to happen after Michael Carter Williams comes back.
I was just gonna say because if
they really need that,
because right now, but if you're just doing that now with their current rotation, you're gonna have to play Isaiah Cannon, which is not the move ever.
If Fred's not going to feel like he can just bench Rondo in the fourth quarter on a night Rondo's been atrocious, on a night Rondo can't keep up with an opposing point guard through not even Rondo's fault of effort on this night, just his physical capabilities at this point compared to John Wall. If Fred doesn't feel like he can do that, at some point the Bulls got to find out how good they can be with Rajon Rondo's role minimized. And look, you can still ride him and play him, start him, ride him a lot. Those nights he's playing well, the nights it's a good matchup, the nights he's really engaged, go for it. But look, when he's bad, you cannot keep throwing gasoline on that fire. Like, you, at some point you have to try to put it out. You can't just sit there and do nothing. And that's what the Bulls are doing at this point. They're just letting the blaze is just going. And they're making no effort to correct that problem. Like, this is a night he needed pulled in the fourth quarter. Fred reinserted him back in there with whatever, 7 or 8 minutes left, just like normal. Because, what, like a football coach with a 2-point conversion chart. That's what it says right now. This is what I have to do. Rajon Rondo, $14 million, got to put him back in. Look, someone has to make a decision here. And it's falling on Fred Hoiberg to do that. Fred can only do so much. But that's the one thing he can do, so he needs to do it. And then the Bulls need to try a lot harder and listen to Dwayne Wade and make more movement. But if you're a coach, like we said 100 times on this podcast, there's not much Fred Hoiberg can do because the roster is so ill-equipped for him and the bench is so bad, okay? That is the front office's fault. They did not set Fred Hoiberg up to have success this year. There's no doubt in my mind that more of the responsibility falls on that. But the one move you can make, you need to do it.
Yeah, I can't say I disagree with any of that.
And I know that's sending a message because in some ways it'll be taken as a middle finger to the front office that signed him.
You're calling it what it is.
Like, if Rajon Rondo is going to be that bad in a game, and look, you can say you put Doug McDermott back in with 50 seconds left when you're down 9. No, put him back. Have him out there.
Put him back in with like four minutes left.
4 or 5 minutes left when it's still a 4-point game. And maybe it's different because there's more spacing. And maybe Jimmy and Dwayne get to the hoop a little more. Maybe McDermott hits 1-3 and that just changes his course. And remember, the Bulls got beat on a lot of runouts because Rondo, he only missed 2 shots in the fourth quarter because I think he only took 2.
Mm-hmm.
But just this crunch, this spacing, no spacing in there, makes it hard on everyone to make shots. And the Wizards get the rebound and they're faster and they're already off and running because the Bulls are out of position. Like, if you have more spacing out there, you're more likely to have someone like, oh, Doug McDermott behind the 3-point arc because that's where he lives. That's what he does. At least theoretically, he's a marksman. He's already back there in better transition defense position. So maybe you don't get a run out and maybe you win a game you shouldn't have lost. Because the Wizards are still, they played well, but they're still not a good
team. They're still in kind of that same cluster with the Bulls. They're one game behind the Bulls right now in the East standings. But
the Bulls fell to, I think, a tie
14-14.
14-14, a tie for 6th or 7th in the East. They're like one game up on the 9 spot now. We've talked about it. That's what the East is. And look, again,
it's going to keep fluctuating like that.
Fred Hoiberg is so, he's in such a tough position because all his success has come when he's been able to maximize floor spacing, and he has none of it, and he can't magically snap his fingers and get it. But that it worked in the Spurs game, like having McDermott out there. Like, they won that ball game. And I know you don't want to alienate Rondo, but, like, that's a move to me when Rondo is that atrocious that you just go with. You know, at some point that's got to happen. And he was asked, you know, are you open to fourth quarter rotation changes? And he said yes. Wasn't directly asked the follow-up who those rotation changes could be, other than to say he'd considered McDermott over Rondo. And I hope we see it sooner on the nights Rondo isn't good. Because, look, he's really helpful on those nights when he is engaged and when they're playing defenses that don't completely sag off of him. On those nights Jimmy and Dwayne shoot better, you can get away with Rondo out there more. But when Jimmy and Dwayne's jumpers aren't falling, we know there's not a lot of jumpers coming elsewhere either for this team. Defense packs it in. So all I'm saying is Fred needs to do everything he can with the limited, so limited personnel he has. Otherwise, this Bulls team is they're going to be winning 37, 38 games if they, you know, kind of let these slip away. These are games they need to win.
I absolutely agree. So, I mean, I think that kind of covers it. We're going to take the weekend off, the holiday weekend. We're going to, you know, they play Charlotte on Friday. They play the Spurs on Christmas Day. Those are both road games. We'll be back with you on Monday, but, you know, enjoy the holiday weekend, everybody. Be safe.
Yeah. Follow us on Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Follow Sean at Hyken. Follow myself at Cody Westerlund. We have a Facebook page, Locked On Bulls, if that's the easiest way for you to find links to the podcast. We welcome questions, as always. I know we don't get to a great deal of questions after these games, but again, on those off days, we want to go, on those practice days, off days, we want to go hard with your questions. I know you guys ask a lot about trades. Remember, not a lot of trade value for the Bulls right now. Don't have a lot of trade pieces. We're happy to answer those, but we'll know more about trades further down the road, obviously. And as we mentioned, happy holidays to everyone. We'll be back Monday after that Pacers game. When you're at the family dinner table, share the news about Locked On Bulls to all your family and friends. Like, I know you're seeing people, aunts and uncles, cousins, that you only see like once a year. Like, this is your chance to tell them about Locked On Bulls. You know, you can.
And
tell
if you're a fan of a different team, tell them to check out their podcast, the Locked On Podcast Network.
You can tell your buddies in the city every day that you see them and go out with them about Locked On Bulls, but you only get one chance a year to tell Aunt Thelma to subscribe to Locked On Bulls. So make sure this is your opportunity to do that. And as Sean said, we're available pretty much everywhere podcasts are found.
That's right. You can find us, or your family members can find us, on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play. Make sure you tell your family members also at your Christmas dinner to leave us a 5-star review. Or if your family members own businesses that want to advertise with us, tell them to email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Happy holidays. We'll be back with you guys next week.